Florida man's arrested for selling counterfeit Cisco. Apple defends against government spyware. And Datto founder says frowny face. These stories and more on today's edition of MSP Dispatch. Good morning and welcome to the July 12th episode of MSP Dispatch. I'm Ray Rossini, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Tony Francisco. How you doing?
Good morning, everyone. Awesome, Ray. How the heck are you doing today?
Fantastic. It's Miami. It's sunny. It's rainy. It's sunny. We won't get into it. It's another beautiful day. How you doing, brother? How was your weekend?
It was good. It was sunny and then rainy and then sunny and then rainy. And I said, I just don't like this rain. Oh, I'll just wait 5 more minutes. Oh, it's sunny again. It's sunny again. Great.
Typical Florida man stuff. And I think in our news, we got our first story is about Florida man. So let's get to it. In an article on bleepingcomputer.com reported by Sergio Gatlan, Miami CEO of pro network entities Ansar Aksoy has been charged with the sale of millions of dollars worth of counterfeit Cisco devices. Clients include governments and health organizations. The complaint alleges that 38-year-old Florida man imported tens of thousands of modified, low-quality, sometimes refurbished networking devices for as little as 95 to 98% off Cisco MSRP. Counterfeits came from Hong Kong and China via a network of at least 19 firms in New Jersey and Florida. Pro network entities generated more than $100 million in revenue. In July 2021, law enforcement seized 1,156 counterfeit devices worth over $7 million. He was arrested on June 29th, 2022. Tony, there's an old saying, if it's too good to be true, it probably isn't true. With that said, who's really at fault here?
I am so frustrated. We've all been in that situation where we find such a great deal, something that just makes perfect sense at that time until it doesn't. And this goes back to the eBay Craigslist sales that eventually had to be authenticated. There were third-party processes to authenticate the transaction, the validity of the transaction because of fraudulent activity. There's always going to be people out there trying to scam money out of you, which is so unfortunate. But then you have the other side of the audience, which is selling quality items at a quality process that's defined, that's hardened, that's authentic, but people are unwilling to pay those particular marks. Now, if the marks are just a small margin, then what is the question? But sometimes the markup is not a small margin. Sometimes it's 50, 60% less to purchase this over here. But now you have a bet. You have a bet. I am betting. I am making a guess that this is the right decision. Network equipment like this is no joke. This is not something that you want to play around with. This is Cisco. This is the no one's ever been fired for purchasing Cisco equipment. This makes me sad because it hurts the very community that we're talking to right now, the MSP audience that are purchasing this equipment. So I would love to hear from people. Have you been suckered into something like this? Have you taken, hey, listen, I know this is really weird, but we got this extra shipment of speakers and I have them around back. $50. We all know that one. What are your thoughts on that?
Kills me, right? Like that's the part that kills me because like I'm a Miami native. You've been to Miami 1,000 times. We have all the stuff that comes in from South and Central America and, you know, stuff that we get from overseas also, you know, from the East. And so we're like in Miami, you're taught to be highly vigilant for things that seem too good to be true. Now, if it was any time other than the last couple of years where, now this does go back as early as like 2007, 2009, some of the articles, some of them cite much later. But you know, I'm looking now, like I'm looking at the chip shortage, right? You can't find toast. There was literally a chicken wing shortage. Chicken wings were doubled in price at Sports Grill because there was a shortage, you know, but so right now there's supply chain shortage for everything. And I wonder if people are buying today, would they be as ethical, right? Like we're struggling to find hardware. You know, I had to do 3 separate orders from 3 separate employees to meet quantities we needed for a recent purchase. Maybe I shouldn't say that on a recorded call, but you know, but the point is everybody's struggling to get hardware and you have these guys come in with 95 to 98% off. They had to know something was up, right?
Well, but not necessarily. It's just a matter of desperation. I'm trying to buy a Raspberry Pi, and a Raspberry Pi, $35. You can find them on Amazon right now for $299, and they're sometimes out of stock. They are gobbled up instantly. And I've been witnessing this for the last 3 months as I'm purchasing some Raspberry Pis for certain projects I'm working on. I cannot believe that people are paying 10 times what it normally costs just because of shortages. So if I find a Raspberry Pi that's $80, I'm going to jump on that. But it's from a reputable deal.
I just bought, Tony hates it because every time he mentions some piece of hardware, like I pull it out of my back pocket. You know, and I did just buy two Raspberry Pis. I bought them for $130 and I was thankful I was able to buy them for $130. Now, Tony, speaking of pies, apple pie is my favorite with a little bit of ice cream. You got a story, something to do with Apple too?
We do. Apple Computers is rolling out the new lockdown mode, which could be one of the coolest things ever. As listed in ArsTechnica.com, a lockdown mode is an option that will degrade the user experience and is intended for only a small number of users. There is nothing about this that is attractive unless you're into security. Quote, lockdown mode offers an extreme optional level of security for the very few users who, because of who they are or what they do, may be personally targeted by some of the most sophisticated digital threats, such as those from NSO Group or other private companies developing state-sponsored mercenary spyware. That's coming straight from Apple Computers. Quote, turning on lockdown mode in iOS 16, iPad OS 16, and macOS Ventura further hardens the device's defenses and strictly limits certain functionalities, sharply reducing the attack surface that potentially could be exploited by the highly targeted mercenary spyware. Some of the restrictions listed are in your messaging. Most messages, the attachments other than the images are blocked. Some features like link previews are disabled. In the web browsing, certain complex technologies such as JIT, just-in-time JavaScript compilation, are disabled unless the user excludes a trusted site from the lockdown mode. In Apple services, incoming invitations and service requests, including FaceTime calls, are blocked if the user has not previously sent the initiator a call or a request. And wired connections with a computer or accessory are blocked when the iPhone is in lockdown mode. And finally, the configuration profiles cannot be installed. And the device cannot enroll in a mobile device management, MDM, for all the MSPs out there, while lockdown mode is turned on. Ray, we've run into this situation hundreds and hundreds of times. You have a choice in the security world. You can choose security or simplicity. You have to make that choice. It's very rare the two actually come together. In this case, we're now offering that security hardlined binary option, which removes a lot of the simplicity and the usability from the end user. Is this something that we should see in every single offering? Is this going to make things better for the IT world in general? Is this going to hurt business from the end user perspective? What are your thoughts?
You know, I it's the constant Apple versus Android, right? Like I'm finding it really hard not to say you can have capabilities or you can have Apple. Now, Apple is, and I have nothing against Apple. I have iPads galore and all that fun stuff. But Apple's notorious for, we don't trust you. We're just going to lock it down for you. It's about the user experience. It's about just getting it to work and protecting you against the unknown. There's a time and a place for that. I'm fine with that. As an engineer, I'm perfectly willing to go into the deep end. You know, it's no different than an experienced and veteran diver doing cave diving. Incredibly dangerous, but if you know what you're doing, you have a higher likelihood of safety and success. Well, Apple is that side of the coin of, hey, we're going to give you your floaties. We're going to give you your snorkel. You're going to stay in the shallow end and, you know, you're still going to have a lifeguard next to you. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm good with that. In the security world, it's not uncommon, even when you do know what you're doing, you have lockdown versions of Debian. You have lockdown versions of other flavors of Linux, right? Cloud Linux is a lockdown version. That's incredibly common too. So it's not even just against Apple people, Apple users. Plenty of really hardcore security people use lockdown versions of OSs as regular case because they understand the benefits of it. as a tool for the general public, I welcome this. This is a good idea. I hope it does so without, you know, without harming the user experience, which is what Apple's known for. But it's never going to affect me because I don't use an iPhone, so nor do I have a MacBook. Well, maybe Prime Day is coming up next tomorrow, so maybe I will pick up a MacBook. But what about you, Tony? Do you think this is going to harm the user experience at all?
I have mixed emotions. I think this could instantly go supernova if it's mandated by the IT department. And for the days of old and yesteryear, if everyone remembers, the IT department dictated what policies, processes, and mechanisms are going to be used inside an organization. With the advent of cellular phones, where the bring your own device was never a thing before, now the end user is mandating certain accessibility from the internal workings of an organization that's dictated by the IT group, so they can work remotely. And of course, that's not going to be denied. And that slowly but surely was subversive to the policies and the strict processes that were implemented. Is the pendulum swinging? That's what I'm asking. So there's so many questions and it has yet to be determined, but I'm pretty certain that we're all going to have opinions, and opinions have an impact. I have heard that there are some other opinions out there about some other things happening. Ray, talk to us.
So I will don my frowny face hat. And this is not any opinion of my own on Kaseya. I'm here for the lols. I'm here for the internet memes, and the frowny face is absolutely an internet meme. And what I'm referring to is on July 9th, Austin McCord, founder and previous CEO of Datto, sent a tweet advertising how he felt about the Kaseya acquisition. The tweet led to a GitHub page we have linked below. Excerpt from the page advise, until recently, I have been very much telling everyone to assume positive intent. Kaseya is looking to continue Datto's success. In general, people don't spend $6+ billion on something they intend to break. Change is inevitable and mistakes will be made. But by and large, Datto should expect to continue to be the company that is loved by employees and customers alike. This past week, many current members of the Datto team have reached out deeply dismayed. There is a concern that the current trajectory of Datto new owners will snuff out the flame that makes Datto a place to come do your life's work. I am not associated with the company anymore, so my understanding of the specifics comes entirely secondhand. Current team members have reached out and described the following. Sidelining employees resource groups that support underrepresented people at the company. Looking for long-term changes to budgets with decreases in excess of 30%. Don't treat the office as a hub for community anymore. No more hanging out in the office. Making changes to key benefits like maternity leave down from 16 weeks to 3 weeks. Reducing 401k matching from 4.5% to 0%. Reducing vacation PTO from 20+10 to 17 days total. We will leave you to read the rest of this post because it does go on in some further detail, and we want to be clear that this is somebody's personal opinion. We have no way to verify the allegations made in the post. Joining us to discuss the Kaseya acquisition and private equity acquisitions in general is Dave Sobel, host of the Business of Tech podcast. How you doing, Dave?
I'm great. Thanks for joining or having me on, guys. This was great fun.
Same here, man. I appreciate you. Now, you know, I'm not bringing you on to talk about the allegations of what Kaseya may or may not have done to the Datto culture, but more so you focus on the actual business of tech. What happens? There's a playbook you've talked about with different private equity firms when they acquire a new entity. And you've talked about this in previous podcasts. I want to be very clear. You made a lot of predictions that have been right on the money so far. But it seems to me, we've seen the outcry on Reddit. We've seen the outcry in Facebook and Slacks and Discords. And a lot of the feedback from the background has been maybe the MSPs don't understand the general playbook that these PE companies are following. Can you give us some of that insight? Why is this business as usual?
Well, so too many of the MSPs are judging this with an emotional lens of why they like, quote unquote, the company, but more importantly, why they like some of the people. And I think that's coloring a lot of that. And I actually think this is going to be important to dig into. You know, Datto is a beloved company, amazing founder leader who's done great work and loves the MSP community so much. Okay. That is great marketing. That is great positioning. That is great messaging. They have invested a lot of time and energy to build that face to the organization. But let's also call out what happened here. Datto went public, and by the financial definition, is a failed IPO. Over 18 months, the price went down continuously, and the market rejected the value of the organization. That's what happened. So the board, including Austin McCord, had conversations to sell the organization because they were not maximizing the value of the asset in the public markets, and a buyer, they believed a buyer would be able to do that. So this is technically a distressed asset that was sold. So what happens at that point is you're taking an asset that is not performing to the level that you believe it should be. That's Datto, everybody.
I want to stop you right there to clarify something, because it was not by all parties, but at least if you read the press releases and you read, you know, some of the commentary by both Datto and Kaseya, it was put out as Datto was the shining jewel and was brought into the Kaseya fold because of its promise, because of its excellence in the business, in enterprise. Now you're saying that's not the case. You're saying this was a fire sale to, you know, they weren't performing as needed on the stocks, on the stock exchange. So this was a fire sale to go into another company.
One puts out a press release that says, this is a real stinker, we're buying on the cheap. Like their job is to position a good story around this, right? If they were making the kind of value they want in the open market, do I think they would have gone private again? No, absolutely not. I think they would have continued to see the value of an increasing stock price. But that's not what happened, right? And in fact, let's walk through the decision-making process. They were approached by multiple potential buyers, of which the board, including Austin, reviewed and decided that the best way to take advantage of the value of the asset they had was to sell. That was the best plan for the organization. Now, by selling, you are taking the company and you are giving it to someone else who, by very definition, is going to put this together with their own organization and start making changes to optimize. Because, by the way, the previous thing not working. let's call it out. Everyone isn't willing to say that this wasn't optimized to better. And so you take these two assets and you put them together. Now there's a process, right? There's a whole process to go through of bringing these two things to integrate the businesses together. That includes bringing a consistency across. You want to move to one HR department, one financial group. You're trying to optimize to say, we don't need two of everything. Fred himself said in the discussion, as an example, you don't need two CEOs. That's why Tim Weller exits stage left, right? Because you don't need two CEOs. Now, one of those pieces of process is bringing together compensation packages to find a healthy medium to that. And we could get into the specifics of what might work for that. We've got two different stories going on. But what I want to look at here is kind of we can both look at the mechanics of the merger, but we can also look at the motivations of the people who are having a very public discussion of something that generally isn't done in public.
Can I ask a question here? I've also heard from Fred that the CEO of Kaseya, for everyone's FYI, that the two companies are going to operate completely independent. So if you have these two independent silos where one is known to be a little bit less liked than another, one that is extremely adored in the MSP channel community, it still is going to remain independent. And although there are going to be common denominators, meaning two CEOs can't exist, et cetera, common denominators removed, there are still mechanisms in there that are required for it to run independently and remain beloved in the channel community, in the MSP community. Are those being subvertly and subtly diluted, and will those have an impact on the existing status of the overall emotion and will it endure? That's my question.
Well, who knows what. And so, because I would counter with, what does independent operation mean? It's one company. I'm just going to like, it is one company. It is one leadership, right? There's one CEO that runs the organization. So what does independent mean? It could mean, you know, wholly owned subsidiary, right? And they're sharing HR functions, but it's entirely up to them to decide what that matters. You're right. I'm exactly with you in that when I analyze this deal, I'm looking at saying, yeah, there's an asset that they bought, and that would be the market value of the Datto name and the recognition of that. And I've observed that they have made strategic investments in staff retention, particularly notable. You know, we have Rob Ray, who's very much a face of that. We have Ryan Weeks, who's the CISO. They've clearly made strategic investments to retain those people. So they see value in some of that. But at the same time, you've still got to bring two organizations together. And what does that mean? It's all proof is in the pudding, right? It's all, I just want to see them execute. And if I'm looking at this just from putting my investor hat on, I'm just trying to see, like, how are they maximizing the value of the parts they can combine and the parts that they can't?
So it should be noted that Ryan Weeks announced today on Andrew Morgan's cyber call, he is going to be taking a sabbatical of several months. Some were saying 6 months, and that's directly from Ryan himself. So, you know, we're repeating stuff that was said publicly. He has said that he's not leaving Datto, but he's taken some time off that he said was pre-planned. So we're putting that out there. Dave, my question is, this maybe a little disingenuous then? Because you're saying Austin's on the board. Austin makes the decision. He agrees to sell. Austin knows full well what this playbook is. It happens over and over and over again. He knew what to expect. So does a post like this come off as disingenuous? I'm not asking you to judge Austin. I'm asking you to read tea leaves here, which is
I'm happy to read. Yeah, I'm happy to, because by the way, we have to, well, let's look at all the things that have happened. Austin was involved in the decision to sell the organization, right? That, and I believe he made a fiduciary call for the value of the organization, right? There, because by the way, they saw there was no better way to make money with what they had. Let me just observe: you can put all kinds of terms into a sale. If these values were super important to Austin, they could have gone into the sale. We could have said, in order to process the sale, you are going to keep these benefits as part of the conversion package. Well, that didn't happen, clearly, because they're now up for discussion. We have to analyze the financial incentives that the individuals have. Why would Austin go out to the market? I'm going to assume two things. I'm going to assume Austin is A, not stupid, and B, not evil. Okay, let's make the, because that's too fair. Many yeah. too many people try and jump to like a bad conclusion, or they don't know what they're doing. He is neither of those two things. So he has people that have worked for him that have reached out to him. He has many options available to him at this point, including, by the way, picking up the phone and calling Fred. He could do that. He chose to put this out publicly. What's the value of that? Well, I can see an obvious value of that. Austin has a very good marketing position to the community. He is well respected, and you can signal to the community, these people are very important to me, and the community will very much rally behind that.
That's okay. An interesting take.
and additionally, I have every expectation that Austin is going to enter this market again with another product, with another company. And being well-positioned and well-liked as the advocate for people in the MSP community is a very valuable position to be at. I absolutely see that.
So protecting the reputation before he hits the market again.
Absolutely. And say lots of nice things about the people that he worked with, which, by the way, I believe he can genuinely believe, too. I can believe all of those statements. But action-wise, if you wanted to protect these benefits, it could have been included in the sale agreement that you will retain these things. You could have taken action during that course. Those things were not done. Or he could have handled this in private, potentially, yeah. call them up. But instead, he chose a very public way of doing this. And by the way, it got lots of implication. And exactly as predicted, because you have two players, one of whom is disliked, Kaseya, and one of whom is adored through their positioning, you amplify and play off of that particular messaging. I look at this and say, like, it's a smart marketing move on Austin's part, right? You can come in there, you can say nice things that in the end are just saying things.
And so with that, I thank you, Dave. Dave has these thoughts every single, you know, 5 days a week. It is 5 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week. Dave.
All the business days.
All business days. There we go. All business days on his Business of Tech podcast. I definitely enjoy listening to it daily. Plus, he has his investor series on YouTube. Definitely reach, give him a listen and support him on Patreon. We'll include the links to his podcast below. Dave, thanks so much, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
Absolutely. So, you know, MSPs, if you have any comments, if this has changed how you view the acquisition, or at least how you have responded emotionally or logically to the acquisition, or any of these stories that have come out, we want to hear it. Hit us up, news@mspmedia.tv. Hit us in the comments below or on Reddit, as you've been doing. With that, we have some notable mentions. Tony, you got some for us?
For those of you who've been following the Twitter purchase process, fiasco, story, whatever it may be, Elon Musk making that purchase is taking a different turn. As indicated at Axios.com, there are a few losers during this process. The biggest loser, unfortunately, is Elon Musk himself, who has severely damaged his reputation on the low end, and on the high end could have a substantial cost involved. There's a huge article about it. There are several stories about it. We strongly recommend that you keep up on this. We do believe that the impact to the overall communication level of everyone is going to be touched at some point. And I'm interested to see where this story ends up, but we've been following it from the beginning. So with that, Ray.
So we have some feedback. We ask you guys to hit us up, news@mspmedia.tv, in the comments and the Reddit. And we have some feedback from our good friend, Kerry Wagner. It says, yo, there are some of us on the left coast time zone, not actually in the left coast. So please start a wee bit later in the morning. Kerry, we actually have this so you can ingest it whenever you want. You have it on YouTube, subscribe and like and notify and all that fun stuff. Get the podcast so you can download it daily. It comes out probably 2 hours after we record, so you can get the podcast right away, or watch us on YouTube, or just, if you have my number, text me. I'll let you know what the stories are personally. But we appreciate the feedback, Kerry. Speaking of feedback, we have some community events coming up. Tony, what's coming up next week or this week?
This week, we got some interesting stuff happening. We have on the 12th, Tradecraft Tuesday, bang for your buck, how hackers make money. That's going to be at 1 p.m. Also on the 12th, everything MSP, OIT, VoIP, awesome company webinar, the 10 VoIP myths for MSPs. If you're an MSP, you should be watching that. On the 13th, the next day at noon, Build It Better MSP discussion group, an amazing podcast, and I'm personally attending with Ray as well. On the 14th, the next day at 6:30 p.m., we have the Tech Bar podcast. If you're not watching that, you are missing out. This one's going to have Will Young of Baring McKinley. On the 15th, the next day, MSP weekly wrap-up. That's MSP Dispatch. You're watching it. You're listening to it right now. We still want that feedback from you, and we're probably going to talk about it on that show. That's going to be on the 15th. And finally, on the 19th, the evolution of the Huntress Managed Security Platform. And what's next?
Tony, what an amazing episode. We appreciate Dave Silva for coming by for some commentary. We laughed, we cried, we had Florida Man stories. I don't know how we could have done this any better. My day is complete. Tony, thank you so much, dude. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man.
Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, take care of yourselves and each other.
This has been a broadcast of the MSP Media Network.
Counterfeits come from Hong Kong and... one more time. Okay. Counterfeits come from Hong Kong and China. Good Lord. This is why we record. However, to talk about this, we've brought on... Good Lord, sorry. Joining us to discuss the Kaseya acquisition and private equity acquisitions in general is Dave... One of those days, man. Sorry. That's why we have editors. With that, we have some notable mentions. Tony, you got some for us?
We do. I completely did not see that. Give me just a moment.
All right, it's cool. I have cats running all over here. We're cat sitting. So
we do. I put this over here.